on the federal level, it's just been really hard for the government to come together on any kind of antitrust action, but they all have been pretty vocally critical of big tech. So I think if significant challenges to tech firms come out of the US, it's going to be from agencies like this.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, March 24th. Danny, Jeremy, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by two folks. We first of all have one of our analysts who writes for our marketing and advertising briefing. It's Daniel Konstantinovich.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Thank you so much for hanging out. We're also joined by our director of marketing and commerce briefings. It's Jeremy Goldman.
Pleasure to be with you.
Hey, chap. So, gents, today's facts, a couple of facts about the Pentagon. So it's the headquarters of the Department of Defense. So the Pentagon is the world's largest office building by floor area. 6.5 million square feet. You can believe it. It's got over 17 miles of corridors. It sounds like a terrible place to work. A 5-acre central plaza. It's only five stories though. When it was finished in 1943, it was built in like a year. They built this really, really quick. There were like hundreds and hundreds of architects working on this thing. When it was finished in 1943, the Pentagon became the largest office building in the world. And it's still, still one of the biggest.
And it only has two bathrooms.
Just the two. That's all. Yep. Horrendous. A lap around the outside of the building is almost a mile, which is the ultimate excuse for being late. If you're late to a meeting, it's like, I just walked a mile to be here. It took me 25 minutes. What the hell's going on with this office space? Jeremy, that what you said isn't true, though.
I can't prove that it's not true, okay. But I don't know either way. Yeah.
All right. I don't want you lying to the listeners. It might be true. We don't know. Anyway, today's real topic: catching up on some important tech lawsuits, rules, and regulations. All right, folks, for this episode, we thought we'd check in on some lawsuits, a couple rules, a couple regulations that have been going on. We'll look into Google and Facebook and whether they cooperated illegally in digital advertising. We'll take a look at the App Store and whether that's in trouble again. There's also a privacy police being created in America. And finally, the UK has a new online safety bill that we'll tuck into. But let's start with whether Google and Facebook have been up to something illegal. The EU and the UK think they might have been. They opened a formal antitrust investigations into whether Google and Facebook sought to illegally cooperate in digital advertising, notes Sam Sheshner of the Wall Street Journal. This is one of the few instances in which major regulatory bodies are exploring whether two Silicon Valley giants acted together to thwart competitors. The once secret 2018 deal, known as Jedi Blue, cool name, emerged as part of a lawsuit brought in 2020 by a group of US states led by Texas. The Texas lawsuit argues that Google gave Facebook special terms and access to its ad server, and in return, Facebook abandoned a rival ad tech that could have undermined Google's control over online ads, Mr. Sheshner notes. Danny, we'll start with you on this one. What to you are the main elements of this case to watch? You could argue, I guess, also another way of putting that, the most interesting elements.
Well, I think it's definitely noteworthy compared to a lot of the other lawsuits and fines that have been issued against big tech in Europe specifically, because this is two tech giants kind of being wrapped up into one investigation. It's uncertain so far if both parties will be held liable as a result of the investigation. They've said that they're not sure if it's just a Google thing or a Google and Facebook thing, I think was one of the quotes from an EU regulator. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting to see the EU targeting more than one firm at the same time. You know, Google and Meta have been two of the most aggressively I hesitate to use the word targeted, but for lack of a better word, targeted firms as part of these, mm-hmm. you know, ongoing fines that keep coming out of the EU. And another thing that I think will be interesting to watch is just Google's future and Facebook's future too, operating in the EU, given, you know, the increased amount of fines and antitrust and regulatory action that's happening over there. Both platforms right now, specifically with ad tech, are having a rough time. Google is going through the depreciation and phasing out of cookies, which is changing its entire advertising system on Chrome. And Facebook has really struggled to gain the trust of advertisers recently. Facebook has had some issues with brand safety and with advertiser trust. They had an issue where they misreported results of advertising for a long period of time due to a glitch that they hadn't known about for several months. Mm-hmm. And recently they've tried to claw back some of that trust by putting some more of the ability to place ads in advertisers' hands. They've introduced features where you can opt out of an ad displaying next to posts of certain topics like disturbing events, political topics, things of that nature. And they've even hired an outside firm to verify the effectiveness of these new tools. So that to me is a sign that they're really trying to signal trustworthiness to advertisers who kind of have some shaken faith in them.
But is it fair to, I mean, there are some people who are going to say, okay, I've heard this all before. Like big tech keeps getting investigated or sued and nothing really seems to come of it. I mean, sometimes the fines are, you know, more than a few million dollars, but by and large, Google and Facebook are still making tons of money. I mean, Facebook alone in Q4 of last year made $33 billion. That's worldwide, sure. But Google made twice as much, $75 billion in that quarter alone. It doesn't seem like fines are going to make it change its behavior. And it doesn't seem like these practices have affected their ability to make money. Is apart, I mean, you know, the fact that this is two companies being sued in the same deal or being investigated in the same deal, is anything really going to come of this? Do you anticipate?
It's really hard to say. I mean, if this investigation will probably take years to go through,
yeah.
And who knows what will happen in that span of time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think it's a fair point. Like there are all these fines. There is all this big talk about breaking up big tech and penalizing them for privacy violations, for misinformation, things of that nature. But nothing really seems to happen. And I mean, big tech has been pretty bold in resisting these fines and these changes. You know, when they're not part of Jedi Blue, but when Lina Khan was appointed as the chair of the FTC, Amazon wrote a letter basically saying that she should not be appointed because she had criticized Amazon in the past, right. Which is sort of the point of being the chair of right. An antitrust body like the FTC, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really hard to say. I'm not sure. I think
that's fair.
These are noteworthy cases right now because of the big period of change that these platforms are going through with regards to ad tech. Mm-hmm. But what will the result of them be? Will it be anything substantial that'll really force these companies to change the way that they act? It's hard to say.
Okay. Let's move on to Apple. Sam Schechner and Tim Higgins of the Wall Street Journal write that the new EU legislation, which could be completed this month, could force Apple to allow software to be downloaded outside its cash-generating app store and limit how companies impose their own payment systems on apps. Failure to comply could carry penalties of up to tens of billions of dollars. So another case, again, targeting the App Store in this one. Jeremy, how significant could this new EU legislation be?
I think it has the potential to be very significant because sideloading, which is basically the ability of users to download iPhone apps outside of the App Store, this has been something that Apple's been concerned about for, you know, quite a while, simply because of it allows people, apps can have their own payment mechanisms where Apple essentially doesn't take a cut. And this has been a major moneymaker for them for years. The other key thing is that the App Store kind of clearly is anti-competitive. There's not really a big argument that it's not. Apple's main argument is that people prefer Apple because of the user experience and because of the walled garden approach right. to how they manage their app store. But that doesn't really seem to be something that regulators are going to care. They don't care that much about the user experience on Apple. They care whether or not the practice is competitive or not.
Yeah, good point. Let's move straight away to California. And this is regarding their building of the country's first privacy police, writes David McCabe of the New York Times. He says that it will be the first government body in the US with a sole job of regulating how Google, Facebook, Amazon, and others collect and use data from millions of people. It's going to be called the California Privacy Protection Agency and will be a 30-person plus group with a $10 million annual budget to help them enforce the state's privacy laws, which are among the most stringent in the country, Mr. McCabe writes. Danny, what is your biggest takeaway from this news?
Well, I think it's interesting to see this come from a state rather than at the federal level. Mm-hmm. I think states in the United States have been much more aggressive at pursuing action against big tech than the federal government's been able to. You know, Amazon's merger with MGM just went through without any challenge from the FTC. The FTC also just renewed an investigation into Meta that they were forced to drop in the past. And I mean, there's a bill currently being considered by Democrats in Congress that would give them the ability to block mergers of a certain size, or that would give companies a certain market share of over 50%. But on the federal level, it's just been really hard for the government to come together on any kind of antitrust action. But they all have been pretty vocally critical of big tech. So I think if significant challenges to tech firms come out of the US, it's going to be from agencies like this.
Right. It's surprising because, so David McCabe of the Times was saying that they're filling a vacuum left by Congress. Lawmakers from both parties have long said that they support a national privacy law, but negotiations in Washington have stalled, partly because of a dispute over whether a federal law should supersede state laws. Currently, California, Colorado, Virginia have enacted privacy laws. Utah passed a privacy bill this month, and other states are considering their own proposals. I don't understand why it would be difficult to figure out whether states would supersede federal or federal would supersede states.
Well, I would say that either way, you know, irrespective of the answer to that, I think what's interesting here is that California's law becomes the de facto law for the U.S. in the sense that companies want to make sure that they're compliant with California,
right?
Because California now has a bit more of an enforcement mechanism, and also because a lot of people live there. So, I mean, this actually becomes a really impactful thing that impacts people far more than California. It's going to impact the way in which your data is stored if you live in New York or New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. Let's move on to our final piece of news here. The UK government has introduced an online safety bill that could become law later this year that aims to strike a balance between holding tech firms more accountable and preserving robust free speech rights, Ina Fried of Axios. A bunch of new offences have been added to the bill that makes the senior managers at tech companies criminally liable for destroying evidence, failing to attend or providing false information in interviews with local watchdog Ofcom in the UK, and for obstructing them when they need to enter company offices. Executives could now face prosecution or jail time within 2 months of this new bill becoming law instead of the 2 years was previously drafted, notes CNBC's Sam Sheed. 66 recommendations were put forward in all last year, including some of the ones I just mentioned, but also making online platforms responsible for activities like the promotion of self-harm online, extreme adult content, and cyber flashing. The bill would impose new rules on tech companies and adds oversight powers to Ofcom, the British communications regulator. The bill was first published in draft form in May of last year. So, Jeremy, your thoughts on this new bill?
You know, I think it's interesting. I think this is kind of one of those things where the best way to describe it is there are signs that say don't drive more than 65 miles an hour, when in reality, everybody is. You know, that's just a thing that slows you down. So ultimately, this is a situation where they're basically saying we're going to hold you accountable. But if you were to look at the number of people who are actually right now prosecuted and face jail time, you know, with respect to not being forthcoming with information about how they're, you know, taking down hate speech, how they're protecting consumers, the reality is that this is just something to put a little bit more scare in, you know, big tech. And in reality, everything tends to happen as a bit of a compromise behind closed doors. You know, when a company faces an infraction, there's a bit of a negotiation about what's actually going to happen to the company. But I really don't expect to see major executives at these companies like TikTok and Meta and the like facing significant jail time in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, fair points. That's it for The Lead. Time now for the halftime report. So we'll start with Jeremy and then move straight to Danny. Gents, what's a takeaway from each of you from the first half? Jeremy?
Regulators need enforcement mechanisms. You know, just to actually have something on the books without teeth means that nobody's going to actually pay attention to it.
Danny, how about you?
I think that big tech and big social media platforms are still going to remain dominant forces in advertising. They might have to change up the way that they do things, but advertisers really have nowhere else to go to but these companies that own the largest share of the market.
All right, well, that's all we've got time for The Lead. Time now for In Other News, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Mountain. As connected TV's viewership expands, so too does the opportunity for marketers to use it as an effective performance ad channel. Mountain Performance TV is built with that in mind. Their connected TV marketing software solution is tailor-made to drive highly qualified site traffic and deliver fully measurable conversions and revenue. And by running ads solely on premium streaming networks, you can rest assured that your ads are effective and brand safe. Visit Mountain.com to learn more. All right, folks, we are back today in other news. How consumers view email marketing and what's the right approach to sustainability? Story one, Danny, you recently wrote that consumers view email marketing favorably compared with other forms of advertising. According to marketing consultancy firm Cheetah Digital's 2022 Digital Consumer Trends Index, it found that consumers have a much more positive association with opt-in email marketing than display ads on social media, you note. But Danny, in your opinion, the most interesting finding from this trends index was blank.
I think the most interesting finding is that 62% of respondents said that cookie tracking was creepy. Mm-hmm. I think the language used there is a big sign that consumers are in general becoming more aware of how their actions online are being tracked and are becoming more conscious of data privacy. I think that's driven by changes to platforms like iOS, which has introduced the ability for users to opt in or out of certain apps tracking them. So I think users have been forced to confront the question more often. But I think it also goes to show that, you know, smart use of more personal forms of advertising like email, as long as you're not flooding an inbox with spam, are preferable to a lot of consumers.
Story two. Jeremy, a piece you recently put out talked about how IBM's latest social impact program highlights the appeal of sustainability as a brand imperative. You point out that at 23%, climate crisis / sustainability ranked third among popular social causes supported by agencies and marketers in 2021 per a December Advertiser Perceptions study. However, in your opinion, the right way to approach sustainability as a brand is blank.
The right way to approach sustainability is definitely not greenwashing whatsoever and being very crystal clear about what you're doing and where your failings are as an organization so that you can improve upon them. A lot of the companies that I've looked at, they have just fallen apart with respect to transparency, and they just use sustainability as a marketing campaign and as a gimmick. And consumers are getting very smart. You know, they're starting to look to see if you're an H&M or ASOS and you're making claims that you're not backing up, they will catch you and you'll be shamed for it. So it's not worth it.
One more question for you. The best example of the right way to approach sustainability as a brand that you've seen thus far is blank.
The best example that I've seen so far of practicing what you preach are companies like Tom's, Lush Cosmetics is another one, Beyond Meat, where they have clear ethos and they talk about their sustainability objectives and they actually let consumers know where they are and where they still have opportunities. You know, really, again, it's a matter of not being perfect. It's a matter of saying this is the direction that we're looking to go and then to be ruthlessly focused on those particular objectives and those attributes.
And that is all we have time for. Thank you so much, gents, for hanging out. Thank you to Danny.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Jeremy.
Pleasure as always.
And thank you to Victoria. She edits the show. Thanks to everyone listening. We'll see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen, the marketer podcast made possible by Mountain.